Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 8th day of July 2014. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the New York Stock Exchange. It's been closed down for the day. We'll take up the Chinese economy. It's been faltering for the day. We'll discuss the United Airlines shutdown earlier this morning and the closing of the website that belongs to the Wall Street Journal. All technical issues. Including what's been happening in China. We'll take that up, along with the commodity markets, of course, with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. And then we'll take a look at the cash grain market, too. That with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana, their ethanol plant. And we'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the way the settlement prices came in Chicago at the CME Group. July contract in the corn pit finished a half cent higher today at $4.16 and a quarter. September at $4.24 and a half, up one and a quarter. And December futures a penny and a quarter higher as well at $4.34 and a quarter a bushel. The March corn at $4.44, up one and a quarter. And the May futures at $4.49 and a quarter, up 1 cent for the day. Soy complex finished higher, $4 and a quarter up in the nearby July at $10.06 and a quarter cents. The August at $9.96 and three quarters, up 4 and three quarters. And September, $9.88, 2 and three quarters higher. November beans $9.88 and a quarter, up 2 and a half, and January at $9.94 and a half, up 2 and a quarter. July futures of 2016 at $9.84 and a half, 3 and three quarters higher. Bean meal finished 90 cents higher for the day. The bean oil up 19 cents. Chicago soft red winter wheat at $5.72 and a quarter, down 7 and a quarter on the afternoon, and a settlement price in the hard red in the July at $5.68 and a quarter. 2 and a half cents lower for the day. Live cattle futures August contract down $1.80 at $149.27 and a half. October at $152.47 and a half, $1.55 lower. August feeder cattle at $213.90, down $3.22 and a half. September $3.02 and a half lower at $212.50. And the lean hogs finished the July up 27 and a half cents at $79.52 and a half cents. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
At this hour, crude oil is trading at $51.64 a barrel. It is 69 cents lower. Ethanol futures down a penny and a tenth at $1.62 and a half per gallon. The wholesale price of gasoline is up 4 9/10 of a cent. The trade there at $1.99 and 9 cents. And heating oil for the day, diesel fuel, $1.71 and 4 cents of a cent. That's 3 and a half cents higher. Natural gas at $2.68 and 3 cents, 3 and 3 tenths of a cent lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 250 points at 17,429. The dollar index at 96.465. That's down 0.611. And the gold futures for the day at $1,162.75 a troy ounce, up $10.25. We're under a flash flood watch in the Urbana-Champaign area, all of our WILL AM 580 listening area, but potentially for your radio station, depending on whether you're outside of our area or not. May not be the case for this afternoon. We have heavy rain potential through tonight, 90% coverage in the area, with a 65 degree high for the day. East winds at 3 to 9, a chance of precipitation set at 90% tonight. Showers, possibly a thunderstorm, that all before 3 a.m. And then a chance of showers. Some storms could produce heavy rainfall again. Low this evening of 62 on an east wind at 7 to 9 miles an hour. They'll turn to the west-northwest after midnight. Chance of rainfall again this evening set at 90%.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 8th day of July. We're joined by Jackie Vakes now. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County to take up the marketplace and what happened in Chicago. And I suppose, Jackie, that we probably ought to talk about what happened in Beijing and New York. And I think the United Airlines thing was in L.A., but I don't recall. There's been all kinds of things happening technically in the day. What did you see?
Well, the United Airlines, Todd, was worldwide, and they canceled 4,900 flights or delayed 4,900 flights this morning. It took them an hour to get it back up and running, but this is worldwide. They said it'll probably take close to a week to get back onto regular schedule again. And at the same time, we had the New York Stock Exchange and the Wall Street Journal go down within 90 minutes of each other with issues, you know, computer-related. Routers is what they say. And so, you know, so far they're saying it's not hacking. Boy, you really have to wonder, you know, when you have how many times have you ever seen in the past? I can't in my old age remember anything where we saw this type of a situation with majorly importance in the U.S., be affected. And so I think it's interesting that it kind of couples with a three-week decline in the China stock market that hasn't stopped. It hasn't stopped today, even though 71% of their trading firms halted all trading completely. And, you know, that throws about 2.5 trillion assets, which is about 40% of the remaining country's market capitalization, you know, and so that means that their capitalization before this fall was about $9.5 trillion 3 weeks ago, and now it's down to about, you know, $6.2. You know, that's a pretty scary situation, especially when you look at the fact that the government is, they're doing everything they can think of, you know, directing state-owned brokerage firms and hedge funds to buy undervalued shares, lifting regulations that prevent them from buying shares back that they had previously sold. I don't know what more they can do, to be absolutely honest with you.
This is a little outside of our purview. Normally we would talk about grains and oilseeds and, of course, the soybean trade to China. The sorghum trade to China has been a big part of American agriculture for more than half of a decade at this point. However, these are outside markets, so I want to be a little careful in talking about them. Still, I'm wondering if you have had enough time to read about what's happening with China. I tried to catch up a little bit today, and as best I can tell, there's been a really big run-up in the Chinese economy in the last, I think, only 6 to 7 months, to the point where many were calling it a bubble. So whether this is, the reason I mention this is because you use the word undervalued, and there probably are some stocks that will be undervalued. But is this, how scary is this if it's a correction of the bubble as opposed to a real drop in the marketplace? Because I think even still today, year over year, the Chinese economy has more growth this year than it did last.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, it's expected to have a 7% GDP and growth level. They just dialed that back, and I think that's partially what's concerning investors at the same time. But let's put it on a par with what they've dropped in the last 3 weeks. If we were to do that to our current Dow Jones, let me see once what that would give us. That means we'd drop 6,011 points on the Dow Jones, taking us back down to about 11,000. You think that might be something to get excited about?
Well, that might be. That'd be a third of the value, a bit more than a third of the value of
34%.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average. I think the biggest drop in recent times has been, 18%? I can't quite recall
about
that number.
I think it's been 14 to 18, somewhere in that neighborhood. Yeah. But you know, even that was very concerning. And so, you know, you're right. I thought one of the Wall Street Journal yesterday had one of the greatest headlines. It said, you know, I can't quote it exactly, but what led to the meltdown in the China stock market? My hairdresser told me it was a great place to invest.
Yeah.
And don't we always talk about that when we talk about the grain markets, right? You kind of get a feeling for when the grain market's going to tip over, when everybody and his uncle, who is totally unrelated to the market, starts to say, wow, that's a great place to buy. That's the place to buy. That's the place to buy. And so, you know, I part of it I do believe is a correction, but I think it's an overcorrection. I really think, I don't know how overinflated it was. You know, for 2 years now, we've been talking about China being on kind of eggshells when it comes to their economy. How much is real? How much isn't real? And so maybe now we're finally finding out that a lot of this was way overinflated compared to what it was supposed to be. And until it gets itself straightened out, we won't have the confidence that we had before. I think this morning you mentioned, you know, that they take about 2/3 of all the beans that are produced in the world. And you could see already when they started pulling in their wings a week ago. And when you looked at what we shipped to them this year so far, I mean, in May we were down 4.36% on exports to China. We were only steady with a year ago. That's really an unusual circumstance for us. And so, you know, some people will say, well, it's because of South America. But, you know, that hasn't been the case in the past. And we were pretty cheap on prices back then compared to where we are now. So I don't know. I just think that it's something that as our listeners, you know, we're all interested in corn and bean and wheat, but we're all interested in what you're going to get paid for it. And, you know, everybody's excited about the weather at this point in time. I think we have to also keep a much closer eye on what's going on in the world, because without demand, we don't sell our products. And I'm not saying that demand is destroyed at this point in time, but we have to be cautious.
How would you characterize the action in Chicago at the CBOT on the CME Group and the agricultural commodities? They did finish in the green.
They did. They finished in the green. And I think that there was some real happiness when we saw 240,000 metric tons, or about 6.5 million bushels of beans sold to unknown, which we always characterize as being China.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that gave them renewed desire. I think the rain on the, I was listening to you talk about, you know, the flash flood warnings. I think that's another part of it, that they're very, very concerned that it's going to get even worse. And so we also saw some of the first guesses come out today for the USDA report. And in a little bit, I think we'll talk more about those. But everybody's expecting, myself included, that we're going to see lower carryout numbers and adjustments to what the yield currently is at and that type of thing. So.
Yeah, in fact, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates are due out Friday at 11 o'clock. This is the first report after the grain stocks and acreage numbers have been released. And WASDE will begin to incorporate those, I believe, into their figures. So what are the expectations of the trade? Do we know?
Boy, we do. And it's pretty close on almost all the services. So, you know, all of us get surveyed as to what we think. So corn production looks to go down to 13.4 billion, which is compared to 13,630, which is where they were. Yield down to 165.2. You know, I don't expect that they're going to necessarily dive yield just yet. Beans, 3.781 compared to 3.85 with a 45.1 yield. And some people might say there's no beans that are going to produce 45.1. But remember one thing, a lot of the loss in beans is going to be in double crop. And they are, you know, they're a lower yielding product. So they keep our average down to a point. And therefore, you wouldn't necessarily expect to lose as much. Now, when you look at the reserves, anywhere from 1.5 to 1.55 billion bushel carryout compared to 1.7 for 15-16, 380 on beans compared to 475. And then, of course, wheat, because that had a higher number on the grain stocks report, comes in at 860. Not a lot of changes. You know, when you look at the 14-15, which would be the current old crop, 1.8 compared to 1.876, beans somewhere between 287 and 292 compared to 330. Those are also adjustments because of the grain stocks report. And so, you know, anytime you make those type of adjustments, you're going to see world carryout adjustments besides. And all of those are expected to drop. Corn by about 3 million metric tons, beans by about 1.5 million metric tons, mostly because I think most of us expect to see them raise the Brazil numbers. Wheat by a couple million because they're expecting that there's going to be problems in the EU. And then for the old crop, down a couple million metric tons there too on corn, not quite a couple on beans, and about the same on wheat. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting. One of the side notes I think we have to take into account is, you know, we've had a nice rally here on corn and beans both, and today there was an announcement from the exporters that corn is bound for the southeastern part of the United States from Brazil, and it's going to be delivered in August, September, and March. So they're not messing around. And I think we have to face up and face the reality that is, you know, with a higher price, that's what comes down the pike. And we've had them import corn from South America into the Gulf already. We've had meal come in to the Southeast, you know, from South America. So we just have to recognize that's what happens when we see higher prices, and it gets very competitive, especially in an environment of higher dollar.
Certainly interesting times. I'm looking forward, by the way, to our discussion on Friday afternoon, and we'll be live Friday afternoon for the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. You'll be a panelist on our Commodity Week program Friday. Looking forward to having you back again then.
Looking forward to it too, Todd. Should be interesting.
Mm-hmm. That, of course, is Jackie Vick. She's with Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Here are a few of the ag news stories circulating for the day. TPP remains on track for the final talks this month. A trade deal linking 40% of the global economy remains on track for a potential agreement by the end of the month. The 12 nations negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership are slated to meet late this month for the last round of talks. The New York Times reports United States officials feel confident enough a deal is at hand that they've scheduled a meeting among their chief negotiators in Maui, Hawaii. Still, according to the Times, it will be some time before a deal is ratified. Under terms set by Congress in trade negotiating legislation last month, a July 31st agreement could not be signed until October 31st at the earliest, or maybe by November. Congress cannot begin considering it until December. Well, the Farm Bureau is urging the rejection of the Loudermilk Amendment. The American Farm Bureau President, Bob Stolman, has sent a letter to Congress urging lawmakers to reject the potential amendment by Georgia Republican Representative Barry Loudermilk. The amendment would defund implementation of the renewable fuel standard. The letter echoes statements by the biofuels industry earlier this week. In the letter, Stallman stated, Farm Bureau respectfully requests that you reject the Loudermilk Amendment and any other proposed legislation changing the RFS. EPA, in an unrelated event, is currently in an open rulemaking process that would set the volumetric targets for biofuels for the years 2014, 15, and 16. The letter states that process would be derailed by this amendment. And finally today, another word on the rain. Besides the heavy rainfall in parts of the Midwest, places like Missouri and Kansas, the Missouri River Basin has received above-normal rainfall runoff through parts of its northern leg. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers reported runoff in the Missouri River Basin above Sioux City, Iowa, for the month of June was 6.8 million acre-feet, or about 125% of normal. The 2015 forecast is 105% of normal. June precip was above the normal across much of the Missouri River Basin. The Corps has reduced water releases from its furthest downstream dam to reduce flood risk. Thanks to a smaller-than-normal snowpack runoff, however, the Corps reports the Upper Missouri Reservoir System is well-positioned for holding back more water if needed. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I thought it might be a good time to check back in on bird flu or avian influenza. This story comes from Jody Hemstra. She's with the Red River Farm Network out of Grand Forks, North Dakota, and files the story. It's been 2 weeks, she writes, since a new case of highly pathogenic avian influenza has been found in the United States, with Minnesota and Iowa being the two hardest hit states. During a hearing yesterday before the Senate Agriculture Committee, Deputy Administrator for USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, Dr. John Clifford, said almost $200 million in indemnification payments have gone out to poultry producers.
We've delivered over $180 million in indemnification payments to producers to control the spread of the disease and to help them recover. All told, USDA has committed over $500 million, an amount more than half of APHIS's yearly budget.
Director of the Southeast Poultry Research Lab, Dr. David Swain, said a vaccine is not yet available.
Currently, ARS has developed a new vaccine seed strain for inactivated vaccines and is conducting protection studies in chickens and turkeys. If viable, the vaccine seed strain will be transferred to a commercial vaccine manufacturer. In addition, ARS is evaluating registered AI vaccines for protection in chickens and turkeys against current outbreak viruses.
Another outbreak is expected this fall, that according to Dr. Clifford. He says they learned this spring that response needs to be immediate. Clifford says birds also need to be disposed of properly, but much more quickly. You're listening to agricultural programming from Illinois Public Media here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. WillAg.org is a partnership of WILL and U of I Extension. If you'd like to hear more of our programming, please do visit our website at WillAg.org. We also do outreach in the form of agricultural panels. You can contact me if you'd like to have one of those scheduled for your area. The address is tgleason@illinois.edu. Or call the station and ask for me, Todd Gleason, at 333-7300. That's 217-333-7300. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is, of course, Wednesday afternoon, and on the phone line is Pete Peterson. He's from the Andersons facility. That's the Clymers Ethanol plant near Logansport, Indiana. Pete, thanks for being with us. I know conditions have been wet. Are you getting rainfall or expecting rainfall there again shortly?
Yeah, it's been on and off raining pretty steady here all day long, and you know, we had some overnight. So once again, you know, it's slowing down more local wheat harvest than anything at this point in time. The crop is you know, the stuff that the holes are already washed out. You can't do any more damage to them. But we've got a lot of fields got yellow corn that's really suffering, needs some sunshine, and the biggest challenge now is find out how much you want to invest, and if you can, get across it and put some nitrogen on it.
All right. So I know probably that you guys have been trying to forward figure how much of a crop in your draw area you will have. Have you put any percentages on it yet?
In regions, we're thinking we could be as down as much as probably 30%. And, you know, with last year's yields being pretty good, it's kind of hard to quantify what that'd be in a normal year. But compared to last year's yields, we're thinking probably as much as 30% lower and, you know, a lot of our dry area.
Have you thought about what that means for the soybean crop as well?
Well, soybeans is one that, you know, I think right now, you know, they're suffering, but I think, you know, obviously the corn fields is what gets a lot of the attention. But beans, you know, a lot of guys trying to go out there and scab in some holes and, you know, basically make like a double crop in our area here. But, you know, I think the beans are the ones that are the big question mark.
And what's your basis look like today?
Basis right now, according to Clymers, we're at 4 under. And let's see, and beans into Adelphi, we're actually 20 over the November.
And your bids for the fall?
Fall, let's see, 20 under on corn to Clymers, and beans, we are at 25 under the November.
Thanks so much, Pete. That, of course, is Pete Peterson. He's with the Anderson facility there in Logansport.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
It's National Milk Chocolate with Almonds Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1497, Vasco da Gama left Lisbon with 4 ships to search for a sea route to India. He was the first European to sail there, and he opened the area to Portuguese trade and colonization. In 1810, Gabriel Gustav Valentin was born. This German-Swiss physiologist was the first to discover the digestive activity of pancreatic juice. In 1831, John Pemberton was born. Pemberton was the pharmacist who invented Coca-Cola in 1885. By the way, at first it was a tonic called French Wine Cola. He later modified the formula, taking out the alcohol and adding vegetable essences. Originally, the syrup was meant to cure headaches. In 1881, the ice cream sundae was invented. Edward Berner of Two Rivers, Wisconsin, put chocolate syrup over a dish of ice cream and served it to a patron at his drugstore. Why chocolate syrup? Because flavored soda water was not allowed to be served on the Sabbath. Thus, the new treat, the ice cream sundae, named after the day of the week it was created. And in 1886, it rained snails in Cornwall, England. By the way, July is one of the most prolific months of the year for raining all sorts of living creatures. The top animals likely to fall from the sky? Fish or frogs? And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated joins us out of Kansas City to take a look at the weather forecast for the Midwest. Rainfall here, and the expectations are that we'll have rain, but how much really do you think we'll get across the Corn Belt?
Well, with this particular round, we'll probably see a good 4/10 of an inch to an inch and a half. It kind of depends on your location and how lucky or unlucky you may be, because we do expect a cluster of thunderstorms to pop up as we get into the day and overnight tonight that will perpetuate across a fair amount of the region, and we will see some local amounts in that 1 to 2 inch range once again. Unfortunately, it looks like it will go over many areas that are already saturated, so the runoff and the potential for flooding is going to be fairly real as we go through this next 24 hours. After that, though, I think things will get a little bit better. It'll take us a couple of days to calm the atmosphere down and stop a lot of the rain. But we will see gradual little baby steps, I guess, towards that end. And as we get into the weekend and next week, we should see a lot less precipitation, a lot warmer temperatures. It'll be a steam bath out there, but we will hopefully start receding the flooding and start seeing the topsoil firm up a little bit.
Earlier in the week, the National Climate Prediction Center had suggested that next week might be really rainy in the northern part of the Corn Belt. Have things changed since then to create better growing conditions?
Actually, it hasn't changed a great deal. We will see rain across some of the northern parts of the region, but those of us here in the south that have seen such a persistence of wet weather, we will see the improvement, and that was where my comments were focused upon. Certainly, the northern areas will have a risk of showers and thunderstorms fairly often. It all comes down to how significant a ridge of high pressure that's advertised to build into parts of the U.S. plains becomes. If it's a strong ridge that extends up into Canada, then most of the western Corn Belt will see dry weather and a lot of warmer temperatures, but the eastern Midwest may still see some more showers and thunderstorms and some milder conditions periodically. This would occur later next week. I think the ridge is going to be weaker than that, though, and by it being weak, will probably generate showers periodically across the north from the Dakotas and Nebraska into Michigan, while leaving the lower Midwest with only occasional very light showers and thunderstorms that will be separated by abundant sunshine and some good drying conditions.
Could you check in on other parts of the world? I know the Canadian prairie had been dry. I don't know whether that's alleviated itself yet. And then some of the other northern hemisphere growing regions for winter wheat have been particularly dry as well.
Absolutely. The Canadian prairies have struggled for a long time. There will be some scattered showers coming up over the coming week, but they are still going to have a drier bias prevailing. They really need to see a general soaking of a 1 or 2 inches of rain to really make a big difference. But from what I hear, it hasn't been excessively warm up there, and the crops are hanging in there. But certainly that 1 to 2 inch rain is necessary right now because the spring crops are reproducing. In France, we've had quite a bit of hot, dry weather. In fact, much of Europe has experienced similar conditions. We've seen temperatures getting up into the 90s to over 100 degrees across many areas in the past week. France, though, has had the worst problem with this, and it looks like only about half of their corn crop crop is irrigated. China is doing okay. The western parts of the former Soviet Union have some pockets of dryness, but I don't see any real serious issues right now for them. And, of course, India's monsoon is not doing very well in the west half of the country, where there's going to be some production cuts, I'm sure, as this pattern prevails this summer.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. You've been listening to Illinois Public Media.